We've been going through our series called Inside Out, talking about some things in us that we need to get out because they're dangerous for us. Well, in parts of Africa and Asia, hunters use a clever trap to catch monkeys. Here's a video of that. There you go. What they do is they place a piece of fruit, like a banana or a nut, inside a narrow-necked jar or a hollowed-out coconut, just big enough for the monkey to slide its hand in, but not make it out if it makes a fist. And the monkey reaches in and grabs the treat, and then it's stuck. Now, it could let go and be free, but it won't. It holds on tightly, refusing to release what it thinks it needs until the hunter comes and captures it. The monkey loses its freedom, not because of the trap itself, but because of greed and unwillingness to open its hand. We've been talking about problems inside of us that are often things that we hide, but they always work themselves out into our lives. And there are some dangerous things out there that can really threaten our spiritual, emotional, and mental health. These problems close us off, and they distract us from how blessed we are and how good God is. The truth is, we can't heal what we refuse to reveal. And you can't live as God has designed you if you're being slowly destroyed from the inside out. So today what we're going to talk about is greed. Gordon Gekko in the 1987 movie Wall Street declared that greed is good because it motivates us. Well, Thomas Aquinas went a different route as he included greed in his seven deadly sins. He said greed can be a sin directly against one's neighbor, since one man cannot overabound in external riches without another man lacking them. For temporal goods cannot be possessed by many at the same time. Basically, he's saying what we all know is that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. We talked a few weeks ago about how anger declares, "You owe me." Well, greed is a little different. It declares, "I owe me." Andy Stanley, in his book, Enemies of the Heart, says, "Greedy people believe that they deserve every good thing that comes their way. And not only that, they believe that they deserve any good thing that could possibly come their way. Their mantra is, what is mine because I've earned it. And I've got more coming my way." It's hard to get greedy people to part with their money or their stuff. Why? Because it's theirs and they're scared. Sometimes their excuse is in their background, where they grew up with very little, or at one point they lost everything. But now they cling to everything they have. Greed is tricky. Greed disguises itself and it hides. Things like anger and anxiety, those are pretty easy to self-identify. We feel those things and we understand them. But greed is a little tricky. It disguises itself. And you might even be sitting here saying today, "Whew, it's going to be nice today not to have to get my toes step on this week because I don't struggle with greed." But if we're honest, we've probably never really heard somebody that said, "I've got a problem with greed." People don't admit that they are greedy. We like to call it careful instead. Or Christians will sometimes say we're being good stewards. But Jesus' interactions with the Pharisees made it clear that God cares more about who we are being than what we are doing. If our heart is wrong, nothing else matters. And that's the tricky thing, is that greed hides behind virtues. Greedy people might be disguised as savers, and saving money is a good thing. Greedy people might hide as planners, and planning is a good thing. Greedy people want to make sure they're secure in their future, and that is a good thing. Greed is so easy to hide from ourselves, but it's also easy for us to identify in others. Greedy people talk and worry a lot about money. They're not cheerful givers. They're reluctant to share. They're poor losers. Greedy people fight over insignificant amounts of money. Greedy people talk as if they have just enough to get by, regardless of how much that is. We've probably all heard a millionaire sports star talk about how they needed a new contract so they can feed their family. Come on, right? You've got millions and millions of dollars. My kids are starving. That's not true. But that greed disguises itself to us. Greed won't let people forget what they've done. We won't let people forget what we've done for them. Greedy people are reluctant to express gratitude. Greedy people aren't content with what they have. Now, we've seen these qualities in others, but rarely in ourselves. And we see these qualities in poorer and richer people alike. Greed isn't a financial issue, it's a heart issue. More money doesn't make people less greedy. Greed doesn't depend on circumstances. It pushes out of our heart. So are there signs of greed in your life? Are there always strings attached to everything that you do? Do you always have a ledger where you try and make sure that you're equal in everything? Is everything a transaction? Luke 12:15 says this. Throw that up there. Read this with me. You ready? Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Another version says it like this. It says, watch out! Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. The Bible implores us here to watch out, to take care, to be on your guard, to beware. Don't listen to the lie of greed. Life is about more than what you possess. Don't buy into the lie that your stuff is your life. Tori and I have tried to drill this into our kids over the years, that stuff isn't important. People are important. So if someone drops my favorite mug, how I react is that it will show where my heart is at. Do I blow up and hold a grudge because I lost some of my stuff? Or do I have grace and show love to that person because ultimately their life is much more precious than our stuff? Life does not consist of the possessions. And I'm so glad that God didn't value his creation that we broke over our souls. God didn't say, hey, my earth that you've ruined, my humanity that you have brought sin into, I'm not going to forgive you because you broke it. No, God is gracious and he cares about us. Now, fear fuels our greed. Greed is surrounded by so many what ifs. What if the stock market crashes? What's going to happen with my job? And there's an infinite supply of things that we're worried about. And that is all legitimate. It's scary stuff. But that fear is fuel on our greed. And ultimately, greedy people can't bring themselves to believe that God will take care of them. Greedy people try their best to acquire and maintain everything that they have to provide for themselves a sense of security. But the problem is there is never enough. Greedy people never have enough to provide security for every possible conceivable eventuality. Billionaires still worry about money. And fear pours gas on greed. Greed eventually strains every relationship that we have as it works its way out from the inside with our quest to protect what we owe ourselves. The problem is when we have more, many times we just worry more about it. And we can be greedy with our time, we can be greedy with our energy, greedy with our affection, our attention. It could be much more than just money. And if we're not careful, we can fall into the trap of bigger barn syndrome. Jesus talks about this sickness in Luke 12. Jesus is telling a parable of a rich man that had such a good harvest, such a great year, that his barns couldn't fit all of the bounty. So he tears down his barns to make bigger ones. It never occurred to him to give away the rest. He had all that he needed, but he decided to hoard his resources. He talks about this in verse 18 of Luke 12. And he said, this man that had this great harvest, he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, fool, This night your soul is required of you, and the things that you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. He thought all this harvest and bounty meant that he had security. He could relax for the rest of his life. He could live in comfort and leisure. And he never once asked himself the question, did God give me extra in order to help someone else? Did God hand me this in order for me to hand it away? And this is a picture of a greedy man. And God calls him a fool. And that very night, he died. And he didn't get to spend any of his abundance. It went to someone else anyway. And this is a person who never asked, Lord, what do you want me to do with my extra? Instead, he said, lucky me. I earned this. I deserve this. Forgetting what it says in James 1 that we just read, that every good gift comes from above. And he built bigger barns for his stuff rather than be generous. Having a lot of money isn't the problem. There are some wealthy people who are not greedy at all. But those are people who are asking the question, what does God want me to do with my extra? And when we build bigger barns, Jesus calls those kind of people fools. And the important lesson here as well is that you can't take it with you. You never see a hearse pulling a U-Haul. You cannot take it with you. One day your stuff's going to be someone else's anyway. Why not do it now? Bigger barns are foolish. And those that do that are missing the point. Live for the eternal, not the temporary. Three words that we talk about around here a lot are gather, grow, and give. And we're committed to gather like it makes a difference, and grow like never before, and give like we won't run out. We give out of our time, our talents, and our treasures. That's who we want to be. Now, how about you? Are you honest with yourself? Do other people see your greed, but you hide it from yourself? And maybe you are brave enough to admit that greed is there on the inside. What now? One positive step would be realizing that our wants and our desires are never satisfied. Proverbs 27:20 says our eyes are never satisfied. That old song says, I can't get no satisfaction. Our eyes are never satisfied. Jerry Seinfeld tells a joke about how when we're kids that our parents always warn us, or did anyway, that we're going to ruin our appetite. And Jerry says, hey, I can ruin this one. Another one's coming around just in a minute. Why? Because we're never satisfied. And King Solomon, one of the richest men in the world in Ecclesiastes 2, talks about how he built great things, how he had great success, and there was no satisfaction in it. It was all in vain. He tried to find satisfaction in wine and revelry, but it was all in vain. He tried retail therapy, and he bought all kinds of wonderful things, but it was all in vain. He had an endless supply of romances and partners, but there was no satisfaction. And finally, he cries out and says, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. We are never satisfied. And that thing that you just know, if you buy it, everything's going to be fine. Or that raise that you have, you're going to be like, I'm going to have so much left over. And what happens instead is you raise your level of spending to what you were doing before, and you don't have any extra. The words of Jesus are so countercultural when he says this in Mark 8:35. For whoever will save his life will lose it. Whoever holds on to it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel will save it. This is a encouragement to stop living for yourself and stop worrying so much about your desires and your wants and your comfort and your security. Instead, live with open hands and say, God, what do you want to do with what I have been given? How do you want me to use my time and talent and treasures for the gospel? Now, when we didn't have enough, we had no problem asking God the question why we lack. We don't hesitate to say, God, I need more. Where are you? Why don't I have enough? When things were bad, we asked that question. And when God pulled through, we thanked him. But now maybe you're on that other side. When we didn't have enough, we wondered why. But why not wonder why you have more than enough? What if God didn't just give you more so that you can upgrade? Maybe he didn't just give you more to keep up with your friends. Maybe his plan wasn't just for you to retire earlier or to go on that $10,000 vacation. We probably remember a time when a friend or a sibling wanted our cookies, so we shoved them all in our mouth and we looked like a chipmunk. Why? Because we didn't want to share because we were greedy. I should have done that this morning, right? Just brought like a bag of Chips Ahoy and just like shoved them all in. Matthew 5:42, in the greatest sermon ever preached, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. What does that mean? It means help people in need. Most of us, if we're honest in the room, and this might not be true for everybody, but a lot of us in the room have two cookies. What are we going to do with them? We conquer greed inside of us by practicing generosity. And practicing is the key word, because for many of us, it does not come naturally. We have to practice it. We have to slowly let go of the grip on our stuff. And if we're consuming to the point of having little or nothing left over for God and others, then we just might be greedy. And if we aren't willing to give to the point that it impacts our comfort and our lifestyle, then we just might be greedy. God didn't call us to live in fear of not having enough, constantly hoarding more and more. No, instead, he calls us to trust him and to live with an open hand. So where do we start? Well, you don't wait until you're in shape to exercise, right? And you don't wait to be generous until your fear of giving is gone. It might just start with something tiny, like being generous with your time, maybe at work, and taking the trash out when it's not really your job. Or maybe it's giving somebody a ride to the airport that we all hate. And doing something just little enough to say, I'm going to let go of that clenched fist I have on what is mine. God loves a cheerful giver, but some of us might have to give until we are cheerful. Financially, this is why many of us are percentage givers. I was taught at a very young age by my parents that we give to God first, off the top, and then we figure out how to make do with the rest. And we support kingdom work, and that first bit habitually given off the top to God where we worship, our church. But then we also support those around us that have needs. Being spontaneous, when we see a need, we fill a need. And we see someone struggling and we say, hey, how can I help? Maybe God gave me enough in this situation and he brought this into my attention so that I might do something about it. And this is how we fight bigger barn syndrome. This is how we fight greed. You work towards being generous. And maybe you have to do it gradually, small steps. Maybe some of it is your first step is to rein in your spending so that you have margin in order to jump into situations. But you keep moving forward. And believe me, there is real joy in it. We also try to model this as a church. We realize that everything God gives us isn't just for inside these walls. We as a church are constantly asking the question, what does God want us to do with our extra? And how can we work to have more to give away? We allow this building to be used by all types of people in the community, whether it be healthy grand families that meets and ministers to grandparents that are raising their kids, or One King Sports, or a local middle school cheerleading squad. All these different things, when it might be a little bit easier for us all to just be like, nah, we're not going to do that. But we believe that God has given us something amazing like this building in order to allow it to be used for his glory, to show love. And that's just a simple explanation, a simple example. We want to model this as a church as well. Why? Because Jesus is the most generous person to ever walk the earth. He literally gave his life. And he promises us that it's better to be generous than greedy. Having money isn't bad. Money is an awesome tool. It's not knowing why that you have money that is dangerous. We have to remember that we are not owners. We are just managers. Everything we have will one day be someone else's. So how are we going to make an impact for God with what we have been given? Because ultimately, everything we have is God's anyway. It's all his. David understood that in 1 Chronicles 29:11. He says, "Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heavens and in the earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you rule over all." If you're trusting God with your eternal soul this morning, don't you think you can trust him with your finances and with your schedule? We don't want to get caught in this monkey trap of greed, holding so tight to our stuff that it hurts us and hurts those around us. But we can't heal this stuff until we reveal it. And in this case, it's to ourselves. We have to fight against the culture of greed that is all around us, asking ourselves, why do we have what we have? And decide whether we trust our finances for security more than we trust our God for our security. The Holy Spirit wants to help us to be generous. And in the end, you have to ask yourself the question, which scares me more? Losing what I've been giving or wasting what I've been given? Every head bowed and eyes closed. Nobody likes to talk about giving in church. But where we invest is where our heart is at. And these things show us what is the most important to us. You can go through your checkbook and you can find out what's most important to you. If you're anything like me, it's way too many stops at Sheetz or things to entertain myself. And that shows us what goes on in our heart. But we want to be generous people. The generous people that will change our community. And not just with money. For some of us, that's the easy part. We've done it our whole lives. And what's actually the harder part for us is to give of our time, of our schedule, of our attention, and to listen, to make that phone call, and to be a generous person in those regards. Maybe you're here today and you say, I've been a really, like a to me focused person. And if it doesn't serve me, I'm not interested in it. We got to live with open hand. Stop clenching our fist. And say, how can I use what I have for the gospel? To tell people about Jesus, to show people the love of Jesus. The worship band's going to play here in a second, and we'll stand and sing. The altar will be open if you want something to be prayed over. And don't worry, you come down here, everybody's not going to be like, oh, look, they're greedy. We know that there's a lot more things going on in people's lives than just what we talked about in this moment, and we want to deal with all of it. You've got people in your life that are hurting or things going on. It's okay. Nobody's going to look at you weird. Maybe you're here today and you haven't yet put your faith and trust in Jesus to save you. You're not yet a Christian. Back at the beginning of time, God created a perfect world. And he gave them one command, don't do this. And they broke it. And sin entered the world. And since then, death and pain and tragedy and sorrow and war has filled this earth. And the story of Israel is God continually giving his people a way to get to him and them turning their backs on him over and over again in idolatry and wickedness. And then 2,000 years ago, God in the flesh, Jesus, was born. And he walked this earth, a perfect and a holy man. And he spoke and he said amazing things that people didn't understand, to love our neighbors and our enemies and to forgive over and over again. And then all of his life led towards a cross. And he died on a cross in our place, the only innocent person to ever live, died for us. And then he rose again from the grave 3 days later, bringing the keys of death with him, conquering sin and shame forever. And that's the gospel. Jesus in my place. Jesus died for you, and he died for me, God in the flesh. And the Bible says in Romans 10:13, that whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. You can put your faith and trust in him right now. Say, God, I know I'm a sinner, and I know because of my sin that I deserve hell and punishment, but God, forgive me. Put my faith in what you did on the cross to save me. You can make that decision today, right now, in this moment. And call out to him. The words aren't important, but what matters is that you're genuine from your heart. Cry out to God, I'm a sinner, and I need a Savior. Let's all stand to our feet, and we'll sing, and you deal with whatever God dealt with your heart about this morning.